In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I talk about our key takeaways from MicroConf Vegas 2017. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 336. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we made. It's a word this week, sir.
Well, I am still dehydrated and hoarse from last week. And at the moment, I'm not sure if it's just from being in Vegas for 7 days or if it's a combination of that plus like the pollen and stuff that I came back to in New England.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. The dehydration ability of Vegas. Right when I landed, I pulled out the chapstick. I was wearing chapstick the whole time this time, so my lips never got super raw. And yeah, I was drinking a ton of water. And I didn't stay up too late any night this time either. That was kind of good. I think that helps.
Yeah, I tried to avoid that as well. But I think there were a couple nights where I was in bed sometime after midnight. I don't think it was ever as late as like 1 or 2, except for the very last night. But
right.
Going to bed early certainly helps.
Yeah, and it also helps that we start the conference now at 10 in the morning instead of 9. And it's just that extra hour gives you time to kind of have a good breakfast and wake up slow. I didn't feel tired and, you know, really any day of the conference, which is kind of interesting considering that we basically had 4 days of back-to-back conference. For, you know, if you're kind of new to the show or you haven't heard, we split MicroConf. Normally we do 2 days, and this time we did 2 back-to-back 2-day conferences. So we did a growth edition, which started with a welcome reception on Sunday evening, and then we did 2 full days of talks and then, you know, hanging out on Monday and Tuesday. And then we did starter edition, which is for people who aren't yet making a full-time living from their business. And that's the differentiator between starter and growth. And, you know, if you're already making a full-time, then you should come to growth. And starter ran on Wednesday and Thursday. So it was close. You know, I was in Vegas close to a week by the time we took off.
You and I haven't really talked about this, but how did you feel about running the two of them back to back?
I have to admit, you know, the fact that we sold both of them out heading into it made me think it was probably the right decision, because this it really was a gamble. You know, I mean, we decided to do this maybe 6 months ago, realizing that we were selling the conference out too quickly and we didn't want to grow it. And, you know, there was always a struggle of, do we just keep raising prices? Do we just make the conference super big, make it a 400 person conference, 500 person conference? And we were kind of trying to figure out how to do that. And, you know, we eventually decided to split it up this way. I was hoping that it would work well, but I was, you know, as with any new thing, I'm always a little concerned about what could go wrong. But given the fact that we sold both of them out, my expectations were high that we made the right choice. And then once we arrived there, I pretty much heard almost exclusively positive feedback about the split, both from the growth folks and the starter audience. How about you? How did you feel?
Well, I mean, Xander had asked us, I think it was Tuesday night, how we felt so far and whether or not we were going to be able to do it again. And my mindset coming into Tuesday night was just, hey, we're coming up on the halfway point. It's not like it was running two conferences back to back. It really felt like one giant conference just kind of spanned 4 days. So it was a little, I think that from that perspective, it was more of a mindset shift. But I was also kind of cautious about having this idea in my head that, oh, yeah, I've talked to people here and they've said that they thought it was a really great idea, because I feel like the people who don't think it's a good idea or are not happy with it or were uncomfortable with it are probably not going to tell you, you know, like basically to your face. I mean, some people will, but I feel like that's the kind of stuff that's going to come out in the reviews afterwards, and you're not going to find out right away. So I don't know. I was a little cautious about it just because I was hearing from people, hey, I really like the fact that this is split. But, you know, like I said, they're not going to tell you necessarily like, hey, I really hate this.
Yeah, I could totally see that. In the feedback, though, in the survey we gave afterwards, people seem to have generally a positive outlook on it as well. I think it really helped that we were able to target the talks so well. You know, we're going to talk through a handful of the growth talks and a handful of the starter talks. Obviously, we can't talk through everything we did over the course of 4 days. We had 18 talks, 10 attendee talks, which are the shorter 12-minute talks given by attendees, 2 Q&A sessions, and 2 workshops. And so, you know, there's a lot to pack in there. We obviously can't cover everything in the span of a single show. But you'll see as we talk through the topics that the growth ones are definitely more oriented at existing products, trying to scale up or trying to stay sane while you're, you know, while you're doing it. And then the starter stuff is a lot more focused on these very first steps. And that was the goal from the beginning, right? Was to be able to target the content specifically at the audience so you didn't have someone coming feeling like half the talks weren't aimed at them.
Yeah, and I think we did a really good job with that in terms of splitting the content between those two. And, you know, going back and looking at the reviews, I think you're right. It's, as I said, Tuesday, I was kind of cautious about just accepting things at face value. But even in the reviews, as you said, there's a lot of good feedback there about how they liked how targeted everything was directly at where they were. And, of course, we did see this from some of the reviews that people like, oh, I wish there was a little bit more commingling of the two. And there's always going to be the suggestions of like, hey, let's do a two-track conference or something like that. And that's really hard to pull off, especially if you're trying to manage everything all in the same venue. So there's a lot of logistical stuff there. But I think generally what we did went over really, really well.
Yeah, the two-track thing has only been suggested a few times over the years, but it's tended to be something that we have intentionally, very deliberately avoided. But I don't know, we should probably crack that open again and just talk it through and kind of spitball what it might actually look like to do that, you know, to have a single conference with a starter track and a growth track.
Right. I mean, I think in the past, like all of our thoughts about that particular thing had been, you know, kind of geared with the idea of having the entire conference aimed at one audience. And then, of course, that's when you get into the logistical issues of, you know, like, let's say just for round numbers, you've got 100 people coming and let's say 70 go to one and then 30 you go to the other. But if you're really targeting two different audiences, then the two-track conference idea kind of makes more sense. It's easier to manage those logistics instead. But you're right. I think you're right. I think we just revisit it and kind of think about it and see if it would work or see if it's something we want to try.
The interesting thing is across growth and starter, if you include the attendees, the speakers, the sponsors, and then we sold better half tickets where people can bring their significant other to evening events. Across all that, I think there was something like 420-ish attendees across both, but actually day-to-day attending growth was about 230, 235, and starter was around 165 or 170. So definitely healthy numbers, but a good size in terms of manageability, just being, I felt like I was able to talk to a lot of people and it didn't feel like a sea of people to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard once you get up to those numbers to be able to talk to every single person there. But I do feel like I got to talk to a decent chunk of people. And that size is nice because everyone's still approachable. You know, it's not like I've talked to people while we were there and, you know, they said that they've been to a couple of other conferences where there's 3,000-4,000 people. And it's really hard to, I guess, maintain and establish relationships with people there. But at the size, it's a lot easier.
Yeah, so let's dive in. As I said, we won't be able to discuss all the talks, but we did just want to take some highlights based on feedback that we received in the surveys we sent out at the end. So Russ Henneberry from Digital Marketer made his first MicroConf appearance, and he appeared based on a recommendation from Ruben Gomez, who said this guy's super sharp, he knows what he's doing, he has really unique insights on content marketing. And so we had him speak on the first day, and I instantly started hearing people kind of being blown away. His talk was the perfect content marketing strategy, and he talks a lot about, you know, misconceptions that content marketing is blogging, and he looked at 7 characteristics of perfect content marketing. I mean, just this is a guy who's been doing this for since before it was called content marketing, and so, you know, he knows what he's doing. And right in the hallway when we left, I heard some people saying, "Boy, that blew my mind, and I'm gonna change up my content marketing strategy because of it."
What I really liked was the way that he kind of identified specific pieces of the content marketing strategy and called them assets. And I heard that from several other people as well, like referring to the pieces that you plug in as an asset, because it kind of gives an idea that you can reuse those assets in other places. But by referring to it as an asset and treating it as such, it gives you a more focused, clear idea of exactly what you're going to be doing with that particular asset or the piece of content, and gives you the ability to build it in such a way that it's not templatized, but it's got a specific purpose. And that's what it's for. It was an interesting way to look at that I hadn't really seen or heard before.
By the way, there are summaries of all the MicroConf talks if you go to microconfrecap.com. Thanks to Shay for taking notes and their very detailed outlines of what the speakers were talking about. next talk I think we should discuss that seemed to have an impact was James Kennedy's talk, and it was how to stop giving demos and build a sales factory instead. And I was super into it, even though I'm not giving demos and I have no desire to give demos, but he just had this whole process of how he grew rubberstamp.io and how they've been growing it using essentially sales demos. And what was funny is I walked out of that talk and Anna on my drip team, she came up and she said, "That talk made me want to do demos again." Like, I knew, you know it's having an impact when it kind of makes you miss doing demos.
Yeah, that's funny. I really liked how he laid out the entire process, the follow-ups, what they do, how do they get people to the demos, how do they follow up with them to make sure that, hey, you have this demo coming up, and the foreshadowing aspect, the letting people know, hey, this is going to be the next step, this is what we're going to do next, so that it's not a surprise to people, so people aren't wondering, okay, when is this person going to call me again, or are they going to send me an email, or am I going to get a reminder, and it's all about foreshadowing what those next steps are. I really liked that aspect of it.
And then I rounded out the day with a modified version of the talk that I had done in Europe about selling drip, and it was called 11 Years to Overnight Success from Beach Towels to a Life-Changing Exit. And I tweaked the talk quite a bit for the growth audience. I just thought through some more aspects of it. And also, I have so much more distance from the sale now. You know, a lot of it was about the drip acquisition and the thought process and the mindset behind that. And so I definitely enjoyed talking about it. And since it was essentially the second time I've given the talk, like, I find that my second, third, fourth times of giving talks, they're always better, right? You just have more of an idea of what resonates with people and it's better practice and that kind of stuff. So I felt like it came off pretty well.
Yeah, I think in your talk, one of the things that you pointed out, and this is not a surprise to anyone, but the fact that it takes a long time to get to that point, and there's all these different missteps or places you go where it's either just a learning opportunity or you feel like you're not making a lot of progress. But if you take it as a whole, then you get to see that entire journey. And it's interesting to see that. I saw it in Europe as well, but I do think that you gave a better talk here in Vegas than you did in Europe. And it's probably a direct result of hearing yourself give that talk on a stage and then talking to people, finding out what resonates, and then kind of plugging those things back into it. It's nice to get that feedback and be able to incorporate it later on.
On the second day of growth, so this would have been Tuesday, we had Ezra Firestone from Smart Marketer. And he talked about the exact formula they've used to generate $5 million in revenue from software in the past 3 years. And it's pretty obvious that Ezra does a lot of speaking because he commanded the stage and really kept people captivated.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, it was obvious he speaks a lot. And it's nice to be able to see somebody get up there and be able to just do things off the cuff. And it's, you know, clearly not rehearsed. Clearly, he has the ability to get up there and speak to things from the audience, almost like a comedian when you see them perform and they're able to either deal with a heckler or comments from the crowd and incorporate that into what it is that they're talking about. And Ezra definitely had that ability. And it's, you know, clearly the direct result of being up there and in front of a lot of people and talking to a lot of people. Some of that could just be the personality in terms of, you know, being what appears to be like a strong extrovert. But I think that being able to incorporate those things really kind of helps to set the right message when somebody is up there on stage like that. And I do like the fact that he went into some detail on, like, for example, the multi-touch marketing and creating multiple touch points in your sales funnel so that people are hearing different messages along the way through that sales funnel. So they might hear one message and then they hear a different one. And then in some cases, they're getting reiterated to them. So that you're essentially strengthening the original messages.
And then that afternoon, Sherry Walling talked about understanding your past, current, and future self, and really kicked off with how founders view their startups as they do their children. That there was a study done that was doing brain scans of founders as they showed pictures of children they didn't know versus their own children. And it showed, you know, parts of their brain activating. And then it was people seeing companies that were theirs versus other people's companies, in essence. And it was showing that the brain activity when you see your children is very similar to when you see your own company. And she talks about the pluses and the minuses of this. And she looks, you know, at how your past contributes to who you are, what to do in the present, and then kind of looking ahead, asking yourself, you know, what will my future self want me to do about this decision right now? So I was pretty fascinated by it.
Yeah, and I thought that when she dove into that part of the talk, that was kind of fascinating to me, just because when you're building a product, you're working so hard on it and you're pouring all of your energy into it, it's not something I think that most people think about in terms of what would my future self think of me doing this, or what would my future self want to be the result of this. And she really dug into that and tried to portray it as a situation where you do have to think about those things, and you do have to let things grow on, in some cases, on their own and without too much input from you, whether it's hiring people to take over certain pieces of it, or just being cognizant of the fact that what you're doing today is not always going to be correct, but you have to make the best decisions that you have with the data that you have right now.
And then Lars Lofgren wrapped us up. He finished off the growth speaker docket, and his talk title was Two Inbound Engines That Drive 30,000 Leads Per Month, actually more than that. I think in the end he said they're collecting like more than 40,000 emails a month, which is just fascinating. He runs marketing for Ramit Sethi. And he really talked about the two engines are, one, ramping volume, and two, split testing your choke points. And he talked a lot about going really deep on one thing and how they've spent a year just going after, it was kind of like they started going after SEO with Ultimate Guides, and then that wasn't working, so they switched it up, and he said he'd rather have, you know, 49 amazing blog posts and one PDF than 50 amazing PDFs, because you need the blog posts to drive the organic traffic so that people will download the PDF and get and become a lead. So he also talked a lot about how he doesn't do any campaigns. He only puts in systems, that he doesn't want to go from marketing campaign to marketing campaign. I thought that was a really interesting look at it too. It's a very long-term way to think about it, but it's also the way to think at scale, right? In terms of really scaling up sustainable traffic.
I thought it was really interesting that even given the size of the team that Lars runs, that they really are only focused on one channel at the moment. And it's, I guess I would have thought that they would have done more. I would have thought that they would have been going after two or three, but in the context of his talk and looking at it in retrospect, it does make a lot more sense as to why they're going so deep on one particular channel. And it's because it's working well for them. And you really want to double down on those and optimize everything you possibly can until you get to a point where it's no longer working, or you're no longer getting the gains that you could be getting. I think you and I have kind of talked about similar things in the past where people have said, oh, I want to take my app and go multi-language with it, or, you know, localize it for different places. And the reality is most people are not at a point where they've saturated the market. And this is kind of the same idea. It's really going so far deep that until you get to the point where the diminishing returns are so little, that that's when you would start focusing on something else. And he said that, you know, they're really just not there yet. I mean, and it's kind of amazing with 40,000 email addresses acquired every month, that they're still not there.
And then Tuesday night, we had the closing reception for growth, and we had the opening reception for starter. And that was a time for people to mingle and have s'mores and an open bar.
And you're not kidding about the s'mores either.
I know. There were fire pits in the back and people were making s'mores. That was a lot of fun, though, to see everybody mixing together. And it was a big group, and it allowed the starter folks to kind of meet some of the growth folks, and then the growth folks to kind of do their last hurrahs before they kicked off for home. So like I said, starter was around 165, 170 people. We did something interesting. So we work with, for those who don't know, we work with a conference coordinator who handles a lot of the logistics, and his name is Xander. And he suggested that you and I not try to MC two conferences back to back, and that we consider getting, I think his original phrase was, consider getting some fresh blood on stage, right? Just someone new with a fresh voice who maybe could, a starter audience could really relate to. And so we invited Jordan Gall to do it this year. And I think our plan is that every year we'll either do it ourselves, or we may, you know, bring in kind of a different guest MC. So I thought that went really well. I thought it was nice to not have to be present and constantly thinking about what was going to happen after the next talk and what we were going to say. So I think it definitely took load off of me. I'll toss it to you in a second to hear if you felt the same way. I thought the feedback was generally positive. I didn't really hear anybody who was surprised or shocked that you and I weren't up on stage all the time. Even then, you and I still were introing some things, and you were handling sponsorship, so it wasn't like we weren't present.
Yeah, it definitely felt like some of the load was taken off for the starter edition, just because with the growth edition, there were so many things going on, and you and I were back and forth on stage pretty much the entire time. And I felt like I couldn't concentrate as much on the talks during the growth edition as I could in the starter edition. So it was really nice to be able to, I'll say, step back a little bit, but still be pretty heavily involved in all of the stuff that was going on. And I think that I agree. I heard from the some of the different attendees that they thought it was interesting that we did that, and I didn't really see any negative feedback on that particular piece of it. I think there was maybe a little bit of disappointment that people didn't get to see you as much up there because you spoke at Growth, but not at Starter. And I think there was maybe a little bit of an expectation of that. But, you know, generally, it was pretty positive feedback.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, about halfway through Starter, I started thinking to myself, I think I should speak. I think I should have spoken this year. You know, I didn't really want to. I think neither you or I knew how challenging it would be to kind of run these back-to-back conferences. And so didn't want to commit ourselves to speaking at both, which is why we kind of divided and conquered. And I spoke at Growth and you spoke at Starter. But given how things went and how I felt it was fairly smooth and I wasn't exhausted, I don't know if I could have written two talks from scratch, but certainly I might have some material that I could have pulled together for Starter.
Yeah, I think for this year, I think it was definitely the right decision to have you speak at Growth and have me speak at Starter, just because there were so many unknowns. And that's really the issue is, like, with MicroConf, you really only get the one chance at that specific event, you know, whether it's MicroConf in Vegas or MicroConf in Europe. You can't just do it over again. It's not something that you do every week. So you don't want to go too far in a direction that is going to be difficult to manage moving forward or for the rest of that week. So I think for this year, it was definitely the right choice. Whether we change that in the future is kind of up for debate or for discussion, but I don't think that we made the wrong choice there.
So Jordan Gall also kicked us off and did the first talk of Starter, and he talked about all the mistakes that they've made along the way with his startup Carthook, and you know how they've continued to grow during that and the learnings that came from it. When we had originally talked, we had talked about him doing the same talk he had done in Europe, but he basically just wrote a completely new talk for the Vegas audience.
What I really liked about Jordan's talk was the fact that he showed all of those different failures along the way, or at least the ones that he felt were failures. But if you looked at how things were going for the business, that things were still kind of generally going up and to the right. And it's interesting to kind of note that your own personal viewpoint of how things are going are always going to be worse than how things are actually going. Not always, I guess. You know, there are some exceptions where things are just tanking and you have no idea. But I think in the back of our minds, we know that things are going in that direction. But it's from external, you look at the business and say, oh, things are going fantastic, things are going great. But the founders are like, oh man, we screwed this up or we screwed that up. And it's a very different viewpoint when you're talking to somebody about, hey, we made this mistake, we made that mistake. And externally, people have a different view of what's going on inside the business than you do as the founder.
Another notable talk from that first day was Ben Orenstein, and he works for Thoughtbot, and he's a co-host of the Giant Robots podcast. And he was another one who had obviously had quite a bit of speaking experience, just really nailed the audience engagement part. I thought he did a very, very good talk. He had actually surveyed the Starter audience in advance, and he had rewritten his talk multiple times to try to really nail exactly what they needed. And so when he surveyed the audience, he found out that about half of folks, it's Starter edition, so it makes sense that these numbers played out, but about half of folks had basically $0 in revenue, and then half had, you know, in the hundreds and on up. And so he actually just had two parts to his talk, and it was like, if you have zero in revenue, do this. It was super prescriptive, and I think it was really good, and I think it hit home with people. And I think it was a good message to have. And then if you were over that, then he had these like 10 tactical wins that they had implemented over at Thoughtbot, because they have a couple different SaaS apps that he runs over there. I thought it was pretty fascinating.
I think part of what resonated with his talk was that he zeroed in on those tactical pieces where it's essentially a switch or a lever that you can use to get more out of your business and move things forward faster, that some of them are not necessarily obvious. So there's some of them that are obvious, like, for example, creating an email course. But then there's other ones where integrating and partnering with other people, it's not quite as obvious, but in retrospect, it makes a lot more sense that you can leverage those partnerships to grow your business because you're essentially leveraging other people's audiences. And if you're starting out and you don't have a lot of discussions with other founders, that might not come to you as an obvious tactical piece of advice.
And rounding out that first day at Starter was Sujan Patel, who many of you may know as a growth marketer. He worked for When I Work and then has a number of SaaS apps that he runs now. And he talked about from idea to launch to your first 1,000 customers with zero marketing budget. So we kind of broke it up into three separate sections. The first was about pre-launch marketing. The second was about nailing your launch. And the third was about scalable marketing approaches. And I really like that differentiation. I think folks who are just starting out often get confused of like, how do I fill my email list? And that's your pre-launch marketing stuff. Or how do I market, you know, once I'm out and I'm trying to grow? And they're highly related, but they are different. And so I like that he differentiated that. And then he just kept throwing out, you know, ideas that they had tried, things that had worked, things that hadn't. And I, you know, again, I took away a lot, and I think the audience probably did as well.
That's something that I saw from the survey results, is that people really liked the speakers who dug into things that didn't work, because it was easy for them to look around and find examples of, oh, you know, somebody did this and it worked for them, and somebody did this other thing and it worked for them. But the thing that kind of stuck out in people's minds was the fact that some of the speakers talked about, hey, I tried this and it didn't work, or I was going to go down this path and we backed off because of X, Y, and Z. And it was interesting that that piece of it, the not even just failure, but the pieces that resonated with people were the ones where the speakers started to go down a particular road and pulled back, because those are not the things that you typically hear about on blogs. You read about the success stories, but not necessarily the failures or the missteps. And people really found that those aspects of the talks were really helpful to them.
On the following day, one of the notable talks was Mr. Patrick McKenzie, Patio 11, and he dug into basically a paint-by-numbers approach to productized consulting, which is a pretty good option for folks just starting out, kind of wanting to get to their first dollar. And so he broke down an approach of how to, you know, kind of build that up. And I think he said your target, within 12 months, you could be at 12K MRR in terms of a productized consulting business. And then he laid out the steps to do that.
I think it was probably surprising to people that when he laid out that approach, that he was talking in broad strokes numbers about, hey, you could charge $800 to a large business, and, you know, for just taking out the trash, for example. And that's not a huge amount of money to them, because companies with more than 20 employees pay way more than that sometimes. I've seen business plans, or seen businesses for sale, where that's exactly right. I mean, I've seen literally that line item before, and it can be fairly high. You don't really think about it, but there's all those business problems that larger companies have, and by larger, I mean 20 employees and up, that is a genuine business opportunity. You just don't typically think about it unless you see what those line items are. And that's difficult for most of us who are developers or just not involved in any sort of budget discussions for a larger business.
Another talk that I heard positive feedback about, and I thought he did a good job of commanding the stage, was Justin Jackson talking about the Freedom Ladder, financial independence through products. And he talked about a lot of different ways, you know, that he had kind of tried over the years to make a full-time living. And in essence, he said January 1 of 2016 is when he finally was able to make it from his own products, and he didn't have to consult anymore. And he talked about many different ideas, but one that was interesting and seemed to resonate with a few people that no one else had talked about was just doing workshops, like in-person workshops. And he says, yes, it's super scary. And yes, he has given a workshop where it was just him and like two other people. But he said, that's how you're going to learn, you know, and if you can't get a couple people to get into a room in your local town, how are you going to get folks on the internet to pay you any money? And so I thought that was kind of a cool way to think about it.
I think that's one of the fears that people have about running those workshops, is that you only get one or two people there. I talked to somebody who had given a talk at a conference where they said they were, you know, expecting a couple hundred people in the room, and it was a multi-track conference, and they ended up with eight or something ridiculously small like that. And one or two of them got up in the middle of the talk and left. But at the same time, those are the places where you learn. Those are the places where you figure out what's going to work and what's not. And what we all want is to be able to go in and run a workshop like this, and we get 30 or 40 people. But the problem is, at that point, you are essentially performing in front of a group of 30 or 40 people, and you've never really performed in front of a group of five, for example. So what you're doing is you're making larger mistakes in a larger environment. And that's probably, it's counterintuitive that you want the smaller ones first, but those are the ones that help you get the experience, so that when you go to those larger environments, you give a larger talk or a larger workshop, that it's not as scary. You've got the butterflies out. You've been able to answer the exact same questions in that larger workshop that you have in smaller ones. And you can refine your answers from there as well.
And then you mostly rounded out the day and rounded out Starter. You actually interviewed John Collison. You did a moderated Q&A with him. And he is, for those who don't know, he's the co-founder of Stripe. And Xander was saying he's the youngest billionaire either in America or in the world. Because I think he's like, what, 25? And Stripe's now worth $9 billion, and he owns a big chunk of it. So that was kind of cool. How did it feel to be up on stage with him?
That was interesting. I mean, I wasn't necessarily nervous from that regard, because I don't think that Xander had mentioned that to me. But it was interesting looking at the schedule and how things were going to be going for the rest of the day. And I realized that I was probably going to be up on stage for a good chunk of that last day. But I mean, I think that the Q&A session went well. We took some questions from the audience and let them, you know, there was a list of questions that we had that we wanted to get out there and then ask, allow the audience to ask questions as well. I thought that was a good split. You know, and of course, that's obviously, like, I'll say a little bit risky because you never know what somebody's going to ask. But I thought that John was very honest and upfront. He just said, look, if I can answer the question and help you out, I will. And if there's something I can't talk about it, I'll just tell you I can't talk about it. And I thought that that was very humble of him. I really like talking to John both before, during, and after the conference just because of, you know, how he carries himself. He's obviously a very skilled and intelligent person, but I think he makes for a good founder that is a good fit with our audience as well.
And the last talk of Starter was your talk. It was idea validation and customer development. And you know, it's pretty self-explanatory what you went through. How did it feel? What kind of feedback did you get? And how did you feel on stage?
After the talk, I got some good feedback from people. It was kind of odd because the workshop that I did was also on that. And that was, I'd say, pretty well attended. But, you know, even during the workshop that I did, there were a lot of questions that I got that I took some of those questions and I went back to my talk and rearranged things a little bit. And may or may not have been the best idea to make some of those changes in the middle of it or, you know, just before I was going out there. But I also think that some of those things are really important to cover in terms of, you know, like, hey, if you do this, this is what can happen. And, you know, going out there and showing a specific idea, that was something else that people had pointed out to me. Like, hey, I thought that idea had legs. And it's really interesting that you showed that, hey, you got these data points and were sort of able to prove like, hey, this idea is not going to work or it's not going to work for you at least.
So overall, I think MicroConf this year, the MicroConfs in Vegas were quite successful. I mean, I had a great time and, you know, we've already gotten a lot of positive feedback about it. So we'll keep plugging along and we're looking at doing one in Europe here in late fall. I did want to give a shout out to our sponsors, to the speakers that flew in, you know, very busy people kind of coming in to give back to the community, as well as Xander. Xander helps us run the conference. And if you have an event that you need help with, even meetups, product launches, and conferences, Xander really works a lot in the startup space, in the tech space. He's at startupeventsolutions.com.
And I think that about wraps us up for this. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startsforthestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startsforthestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.